today in the headlines. Australia's Race Discrimination Commissioner has commented on the attack on an Invasion Day rally in Perth, saying urgent work needs to be done to address racism. New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon says regional communities will continue to see an increased police presence until wanted fugitive Julian Ingram is found. Authorities are warning that dry conditions could reignite a large bushfire in Victorian National Park over the coming weeks. That and more coming up in the news on NITV Radio. Australia's Race Discrimination Commissioner has commented on an attack on an Invasion Day rally in Perth, saying urgent work needs to be done to address racism. A 31-year-old man has been charged over the incident where he allegedly threw an improvised explosion device into a crowd of First Nations protesters and their allies, with the device failing to detonate. A joint counter-terrorism team, including the AFP, ASIO and Western Australian Police, is investigating the incident as a potential terrorist act. Commissioner Giriharman Sivaraman tells SBS News the Australian Human Rights Commission is calling the government to adopt its anti-racism framework to help eliminate the hate that he believes motivated the attack.
We tabled the National Anti-Racism Framework with the federal government in November 2024, and we still haven't heard as to whether they will endorse it, adapt it, or implement it. And that framework is First Peoples centred.
Two people have been arrested and spent the night under police guard in hospital after an incident in which police were forced to fire shots at an allegedly stolen car when it reversed into a school bus. The police air wing spotted the stolen vehicle in the Newtown area of Geelong yesterday, Thursday. As the police tried to intercept the vehicle, it's alleged it reversed into a packed school bus. Police say the car was driven at them and they were forced to discharge their firearms before it collided with another vehicle. The occupants of the school bus were not injured. A man and woman fled on foot but were arrested nearby. The man is in hospital after suffering a non-life-threatening gunshot wound to the arm, while the woman has minor injuries. Commander Melissa Webber says she's shocked at the incident.
I'm really dismayed to see such violent and reckless behaviour exhibited by this offender who put our community at risk, who put our police at risk.
New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon says regional communities will continue to see an increased police presence until wanted fugitive Julian Ingram is found. Mr. Ingram is on the run from authorities after he's alleged to have fatally shot three people, including his pregnant former partner, last week in the western New South Wales town of Lake Carjaligo. Police say they're confident he's still alive and may be receiving help, with a reported sighting in Mount Hope being investigated. New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon says police won't stop the search until Lake Carjaligo and its surrounding communities are safe.
My commitment to you as the Commissioner and as the New South Wales Police is that we will be here to keep you safe. I want to make sure that not only are you safe, but you feel safe. So you will continue to see a significant policing presence until such time as we put Mr. Ingram before the court.
Emergency services have found the body of a 16-year-old boy in the Blue Mountains after he lost touch with his friend while on a camping trip. He and his 17-year-old friend travelled by train to Lira, 80 kilometres west of Sydney, and then set off to Mount Hay on foot as part of a three-day trip. Police say the older boy activated his personal locator beacon on Wednesday evening after they became separated. Emergency crews rescued the 17-year-old while the other teen's body was found nearby in a creek. A report will be prepared by the coroner. And now in sport, in tennis, world number one and two-time champion Aryna Sabalenka has defeated Ukrainian 12th seed Elena Svitolina at the Australian Open women's semi-finals in Melbourne Park Thursday night. This will be Sabalenka's fourth consecutive Australian Open final. The Russian and Ukrainian competitors did not join each other for the pre-match photo at the coin toss and did not shake hands after the match, with Svitolina making statements regarding the war between Ukraine and Russia throughout the tournament. Sabalenka, alongside other Russian players, has openly opposed the war. In a later Thursday contest, American Jessica Pegula played against fifth-ranked Elena Rybakina, who outlasted her opponent to book an Australian Open rematch against Sabalenka. Authorities are warning that dry conditions could reignite a large bushfire in a Victorian national park over the coming weeks. The threat has been downgraded for now after a blaze in Victoria's Otways destroyed 3 homes and 16 other structures when a wind change occurred during severe heatwave conditions. While milder weather is helping firefighters control the situation, Forest Fire Management Victoria Chief Fire Officer Chris Hardman says the risk of a flare-up on fire grounds remains. There is a watch and act order on a number of communities in the area after an emergency level warning was downgraded on Wednesday afternoon. Residents have been warned it's not safe to return, with trees and debris blocking the roads and creating hazards. And now for a look at today in the weather. Perth is sunny at 34. Adelaide is mostly sunny at 41. Melbourne is mostly sunny at 29. Hobart is mostly sunny at 23. Canberra, mostly sunny at 40. Wollongong is mostly sunny at 28. And Sydney is partly cloudy at 30. Newcastle is mostly sunny at 29. Brisbane is seeing possible showers at 31. And that wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio. January 26 was on Monday this week, and NITV Radio's Kerry Lee Berry went along to the Melbourne March to capture community member voices and to hear what their thoughts are on Jan 26. These vox pops were captured as speeches were taking place by local mob from the steps of Victorian Parliament House.
I'm Dagmar, I'm from Poland.
And why are you here today?
To support the Aboriginal people and support the cause and make sure we talk about important things.
What do you think of what you're seeing here today and hearing?
It's amazing. It'll be nice to see even more people here. And let's change the date.
You've brought your young ones, they're very young ones, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, 2.5 and 5.5, so it's a bit busy.
My name's Rick. I'm from Queensland. I'm here because I understand the history of this country. Not the stuff that they teach you in schools, but the real history. Mass incarceration of Aboriginal people, mass theft of their children. So I'm here to express my support and enjoy the day without feeling guilty.
Nice day for it. Sun's out. Guns out. But look at you, bro.
Yep. And got a new tat.
New tat. What does that say? We're radio. People can't read that. You say it for me, what it says on your upper right arm there.
No pride in genocide.
When did you get that, bro?
About 3 days ago.
I'm Jack. I live in Geelong, but I'm from Western Australia.
And why are you here today, Jack?
Just be surrounded by Melbourne community and people with like-minded situations. You feel really comfortable on a big day, and it can be really heavy on Indigenous people, but yeah, it's good to be around people that feel it with you too.
What does Jan 26, like the day, mean to you?
It just kind of builds up, and it's kind of just that wait for something to happen, what's going to happen, and you kind of not really live in fear, but you've got that thought of what's next. So it's a big, I guess, emotional building day, but yeah, it's that sorry time, but it's always good to be surrounded by people that feel that with you, I guess, and that's how you, I guess, get strength and can move through to the next thing.
And you mentioned the early part, you're here because mob are around here. Do you miss your mob back home at WA, bro? You're a long way from home.
I'm a long way from home, and yeah, I do miss it. I miss them a lot. But yeah, it's how you get involved with people. And, you know, I think for so long I've kind of sheltered myself at home and just kind of felt it. You can't really, experience or explain it to people who don't really know what you're going through. So yeah, no, it is. It's a long way. It is a long way.
And how would you describe the vibe here today, bro?
It's good. It's a beautiful day. It's a big turnout. Just beginning, so no, it's really good. Feels really, really strong, and there's a lot of strength in this crowd, which is really good.
My name is Emma. I was originally from New Zealand, but I've been here since I was 14.
And why are you here today, and why is it important to you to turn up?
So I think the continued structural oppression of Aboriginal people is really disgusting in Australia. You know, with the fact that the people in power refuse to do something to fix the circumstances of so many people who have been pushed down and oppressed for so long.
Hi, what's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, my name is Hannah. I'm from Melbourne. I'm here today because, you know, I think as young people that, like, you should be, you know, trying to fight around Indigenous rights. Invasion Day is a historic event of, you know, the creation of this country through violent colonisation and dispossession.
What a beautiful dog you have here. What's their name? They've come along to the march.
Yeah, this is Hazel. My name's Ronan. I live in Elwood, but I'm originally from Belfast.
And what are you doing here today?
I'm just here supporting my brothers and sisters and just being an ally and, yeah, recognising that all these things have gone in the past that have been... you know, in a, they haven't been good, so it's we're just here to represent.
And you're from Belfast and overseas, of course. How much do you know about the history of Black Australia, if you like?
We growing up, we got a fair dose of it. Given, you know, the part of the fence that we were on, we had a lot of Aboriginal artists come over as. Cultural and artistic initiatives back in the 80s and the 90s. So there's quite a few large murals in some of the housing estates that are in Belfast. There's a really big one in Turf Lodge. I think it was painted in the 90s. I actually don't know the artists who were involved, but yeah, it's been obviously with us, the struggle of Black people has been central to the struggle of Irish people, especially in the 70s, being influenced heavily by Dr. Martin Luther King and the civil rights protests there. So, yeah, there's definitely a deep connection.
My name's Sarah. I'm from Geelong originally. I'm now living in Melbourne.
And why did you turn up today in your beautiful T-shirt? It says Honour Country and it's pink. Love pink and red writing.
I wanted to come as an ally just to show support because I don't believe in the colonial regime.
And what about you, bro? I love your T-shirt. Always was, always will be. I think you mob have had a visit to Clothing the Gaps at some stage. Love supporting Black business locally. What's your name? Where are you from?
Liam from Pascoville South.
And why did you feel it was important to turn up today?
And I think that, like, kind of set the shirt says it about as I can. You know, you shouldn't celebrate colonialism. You shouldn't celebrate dispossession. You know, and you shouldn't, like... And you especially shouldn't celebrate when it's still going on. Like,
do you think the attitudes are changing or perhaps shifting in Australia? With the young people especially?
So the young people especially. Didn't feel like it down at Flinders Street Station when we got off the train.
What was that like? Describe it for me through your eyes, bro. You're a white fella. What did you see?
We didn't hang around. It was a lot of red, white and blue.
What was the vibe like down there?
I know, like I said, we didn't stick around. Found, like, the quickest path out.
Yeah.
It was intense. It was, like, One Nation shirts and stuff. Yeah.
The rallies that I've gone to, there's a lot more about respect and community, whereas that just feels like opposition. I don't know, like, necessarily what they stand for.
Thanks so much for your time today, both of you. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
No stress.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Coming up next is a discussion on January 26.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that the following audio contains the name of someone that has passed.
This is SBS Spice.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Suhaila Sharif and you're on SBS Spice. Every year, January 26 arrives with a pause, a moment that asks Australians to sit with the weight, history and complexity of this date. At SBS, we keep returning to what this day means for First Nations peoples and how we listen to, learn from and honour the world's oldest continuous culture in contemporary Australia. SBS Spice is a home for young South Asian Australians, and this felt like the right time to bring you voices that help us name what's often left unsaid. I am so honoured to be joined by John Paul Janke, who is our National Indigenous Affairs Editor at SBS and NITV, and is also the co-host of The Point on SBS. John Paul, also known as JP, is a Meriam and Wutathi man and is also an SBS legend. Also joining us is CEO of Reconciliation Australia, Karen Mundine. Karen is from the Bundjalung Nation of Northern New South Wales and has been a leading voice in national conversations advocating for change that empowers First Nations communities. And we also have Giridharan Sivaraman, Australia's Race Discrimination Commissioner and the former chair of Multicultural Australia, who continuously advocates for racial equity and inclusion. Thank you so much, JP, Karen and Giridharan. JP, I'm going to start with you. You have been a journalist for many years, and you have focused on First Nations stories, and you have centred the impact of rising dismissal towards Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in contemporary Australia. What do you think is the one thing that people still don't know about January 26?
I think overall, people don't know about the history of Jan 26, and that leads into other aspects of people not understanding that there are some people who don't want to celebrate Jan 26. I think people need to learn the history of what Jan 26 is about. A lot of people celebrate as the arrival, of course, of the First Fleet. Many people don't know that the First Fleet arrived actually a couple of days before that, on the 19th and 20th of January 1788. Then they say, well, Australia Day has always been Jan 26. So people don't know the history of that. Australia Day wasn't Australia Day until later on, and it's only in more contemporary times that it's been called Australia Day. Its origins, of course, are the Foundation Day or Anniversary Day for the colony of New South Wales. And each colony celebrate its own Foundation Day. Mm. So Australia Day is really a contemporary or modern concept of coming together as a nation. So if you learn that history, then you put that into why First Nations people say, well, Jan 26 is not a date for us to celebrate. People miss that connection. And I think we also, because we haven't really been taught the true history of this country, and that's from a First Nations point of view, people don't see why First Nations people think the date is not appropriate to celebrate.
So it's leading voices like yours that are going to change that conversation, contextualise it a bit more. And we'll jump into maybe the conversation around new migrants and particularly those who may not know the history. But Giridharan, I want to put that question onto you now. Looking at South Asians specifically, Indians are the fastest growing migrant group in Australia. And interestingly, Jan 26 is a significant date for them as well, because it's India's Republic Day. So lots of migrants think of Australia Day as a national day of identity. Is this a conversation you have heard as a race discrimination commissioner? And as a South Asian podcast, we actually get that comment a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting because the independence for India is such a different thing to January 26 in Australia. Independence from India was finally shaking off the yoke of the colonial masters, the British, and becoming a nation in its own right, a very, very proud and important moment. Whereas here, January 26 is such a conflicted day. And for me, as a migrant from India, I was born in India, I came here when I was young, I feel very conflicted when I think about January 26 because I think, well, what are we celebrating? We're all on stolen land. And we actually need truth-telling about the history of this land. We're all migrants at one point or another, apart from First Peoples, apart from Karen and JP's people, and, of course, all other First Peoples. And if we're going to come together, we should come together on a platform of truth and honesty. And I think migrants need to have that understanding, that sense of positionality where they are. And also I think that there is a way of coming together in that, what does someone like you or me want? We want systems and institutions to reflect us, to be safe for us. Why don't they do that? Because they were built to really privilege colonialism and whiteness. And why were they built to do that? Because they were built to cover a lie, the lie that no one was here before, that no one was here for 60 to 80,000 years. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders have been challenging that lie for 237 years. Their struggle is connected to our struggle. If they succeed and institutions and systems have to change to be more open and transparent, that's actually something that's positive for migrants. And I think that's often forgotten, that our struggles are connected.
Mm. And Giridharan, in your role as Race Discrimination Commissioner, can you, based on your observation, speak on the factors that continue to fuel the discrimination and silencing of First Nation communities?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, unfortunately, people often say, there's no problem anymore. I mean, what are they complaining about? Stuff happened 200 years ago. And I think, just to follow on JP's point, we do need education. It didn't stop 200 years ago. Aboriginal kids were being stolen from their families through state-sanctioned policy. Well, it's happening now, but it was happening pursuant to the Aboriginal Protectorates and the like till the 1970s. That is not a long time ago. There are plenty of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders now who are part of that generation. So I think that we actually have to have genuine acknowledgement of our past and use that platform of truth-telling, healing, and then hopefully treaty nationally as a way forward. And I think migrants can absolutely be and should be part of that conversation.
I definitely agree with that. Karen and JP, would you like to add in anything else based on your personal experience and as your roles?
Yeah, look, I think one thing, it's always important when we think about the 26th of January, there's kind of two issues at play here. There's the date itself, and as we've already talked about, that marks for First Nations peoples a kind of story of dispossession for us. And then there's this idea of a national day of celebration. And I don't think we quite have gotten to that place of who are we as a modern Australia that we can now celebrate. So in thinking about sort of Indian National Day, it marks a moment of change and that kind of marks a modern India as it goes forward, breaks away from that colonial past and sets a new path forward. We don't have that. We had an opportunity with a referendum a couple of years ago. We couldn't get there. So I think if we're going to change the date, thinking about what are we changing it to, and not just in that symbolic, let's change the date, but actually let's have meaning, let it actually stand for something as we move forward.
Well, I think building on what both you said is, it's really about the meaning of the day. Mm. You know, when it becomes a day of independence, it's really a day that the whole country can get behind.
Yeah.
We're the only country, I understand, that we celebrate our national day on a day that we've conquered another country, we've invaded another country. So I think once we change that meaning and find a date that's suitable for us, whether it's we become a republic in many years' time and that's a day that we celebrate who we are as a nation and our identity and our separation from, I think, our British colonial history, that's really a day that all generations and all people can celebrate.
You're with SBS Spice.
Karen, jumping straight to you now, reflecting on your experience as Reconciliation Australia's CEO, Reconciliation Week 2026 takes place from the 27th of May till the 3rd of June. This year's theme is All In and advocates for advancing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders people's rights as a collective and active effort. Applying this lens on January 26th and beyond, how have you actively engaged with people who haven't been aware of First Nations history?
Yeah, so, I mean, this idea of All In for Reconciliation, which is our theme for Reconciliation Week, is, you know, these things don't just happen by osmosis. If we want to have a society that is fair and just, that focuses on First Nations people's rights, but then looks at how does that then flow for all citizens, for all people who come from different cultural backgrounds, we have to stand up for those rights. We actually actively have to participate. So whether that's turning up to vote, whether that's having a say on new laws or policies or legislation that might be coming through, letting our politicians and our lawmakers and our decision makers know, like, what is the thing that we want to see reflected in the society and the institutions, that stuff is up to us as people and as citizens. And we live in a socially democratic country where we can have a say, and we absolutely must if we want to see the kind of change. So thinking about that for 26th of January, I think us continuing to have these conversations, continuing to learn more about the history of the date, the history of how that has kind of set in train this idea of what is best for Australia, the institutions that follow that are very much about privileging one set of the community over everybody else. If we are not having those conversations, if we are not learning that history, we're just going to keep going and things aren't actually going to change. So what we want to see is the system change that makes this fairer for everyone. And our experience in reconciliation is that when you get that right for First Nations peoples, you get it right for pretty much most other communities. So it's thinking about family first. It's about putting people and communities first. It's about protecting rights of the collective, not the individual. So these are all things that so many other communities and cultural groups actually make sense to them. So that's the lesson to be learned through this process.
I learned about January 26th in year three, and I remember being, what, maybe 8 or 9 years old and listening to my teacher talk about it from the First Fleet onwards and, you know, hearing Terra Nullius and thinking to myself, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, for me, no man's land, correct me if I'm wrong, but hearing that as a 9-year-old and being like, I need to go further into that. Since then, in terms of formal education, I've only engaged with the history of January 26th from news media. And I think that's also the first starting point that many new migrants have is news media and how that influences the conversation, their understanding of January 26th. So for new migrants who may not be aware about the day's significance for First Nations people, how do you believe they can better engage with the history of January 26th? And this is open to all of you, if anyone would like to jump in.
I think it's interesting that your generation is learning way more about First Nations history and culture than our generations did. And I think that's magnificent. They're learning it from a First Nations lens. They're learning it by books and documentaries and material that is written by First Nations authors and communities. And that is very important, that lens that it is taught. I think also we've got Indigenous media. We've got multicultural media now in this space. People can learn about First Nations culture in their own language, thanks to SBS and SBS Radio, and that is a game changer. Mm-hmm. When you learn something in your own language, that is a game changer.
And I think it's also really important to remember that there are a lot of Aboriginal communities who have engaged from way back in the early days with multicultural communities as well. So particularly for when you think about South Asia and Southeast Asia, there are so many families that have surnames that would be very familiar to you. You think about the Camilleres through Central Australia. So there are quite intertwined family histories as well, and those stories of communities coming together and finding our support in each other as they kind of navigated through the 1800s and early 1900s.
I might just add something to this, and that is what this is about for me is building racial literacy, which needs to start early. And I'll use myself as an example. If I go to Chennai, India, the city I was born in, I get off the plane in Chennai, and I go often because I've got cousins there. I'm Giri or Giri Dharan to a couple of relatives and podcast hosts. I get back on the plane and I come home to Brisbane where I live, and I get off the plane in Brisbane, and suddenly I become multicultural or diverse or ethnic, or I've even got non-English speaking background or culturally and linguistically diverse. And I'm exactly the same person that caught the plane and came home. I've been made different by the society I'm in. Understanding, not mine, but much more importantly, many others, how they've been made different by the society they're in is racial literacy. And part of racial literacy is also understanding how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders suddenly began to be made as different, even though they are they're the people that lived on this land for 60,000 to 80,000 years. And I think that you have to start in education. It's what we call for in our national anti-racism framework, build racial literacy early on. I think it is better. I look at what my daughter's just finished high school last year. I see what she was learning. It's so much better than what I was learning about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history. But I think it could still be improved across the board. And when it comes to January 26, it becomes so difficult because there's this undercurrent of nationalism, the love it or leave it phenomenon, where people go, well, unless you're with us, you're against us. Mm. And so you've just got to, on January 26th, that day, you've got to kiss the flag, love the country, otherwise go away. And I think, I love living here. I love the country. Part of love of a place is trying to make it better.
Yeah.
And it's love of the people and acknowledging their pain as part of the history. For Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, there's a lot of pain associated with that day. And I think that's what we have to acknowledge.
Well, going forth with that idea of nationalism and, you know, what's next, like where do we go from that? From the South Asian perspective, last year we saw the March for Australia, a rally that was targeted at migrants and people of colour in Australia and contested their place in this country. A lot of people look at Australia Day as a significant moment to embrace Australian identity, but identity should go beyond just this day, right? So how do we get there?
I just want to draw on something Karen said. The point about it. Our history and our identity is not at all homogenous. So, of course, we have the longest continuous culture in the world, 60,000 to 80,000 years. Then we have, there were 15 Africans on the first fleet, 8 Jews. We had migrants from what is now Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, from the early 1800s, from China. So we have this very rich history of migration and an equally rich history of racism. Because it was in response to that migration, particularly Chinese migration, that the White Australia policy was created, an attempt to homogenise and purport to have this identity that was white. Actually, that's not our history. And if we recognise the true nature of our history and the way in which, as you pointed out, Karen, it's impacted on people, on their lives, I always think about the Archies. Mm. the famous footballing family in some, but famous in many other ways, of course, and that's that combined history. We can be so much richer for it, so much broader for it, so much more inclusive and proud of who we are. But we just have to acknowledge it. We have to have courage to acknowledge that history. Part of acknowledging that is also acknowledging the way in which it was suppressed for so long.
I think what I find interesting is that people's patriotism about Jan 26th and protection of the date. And you ask people, well, what does it celebrate? And they go, oh, it celebrates the arrival of Captain Cook. And then you go, no, it's actually the First Fleet. And they go, oh, yeah, the First Fleet. And you go, well, can you name any of the ships on the First Fleet? No, I can't. So people are protecting this idea of what they think it means to be Australian, going back to that connection to that date, which is the First Fleet. But they're not really invested in it.
No.
They're invested in the concept of it. And that's why I think it's easy that we're still looking for this identity of Australia. And I think multicultural Australia and First Nations Australia can see that in themselves and other races. Non-Indigenous Australia can't see that in Aboriginal history. And the date celebrates 1788 onwards. And we sort of go, well, hang on, it should be celebrating 60,000 years before. They go, oh, that's NAIDOC week. You've got your week, we want our day sort of thing. So it's how does the rest of Australia fit into that day that celebrates that arrival of the First Fleet?
That's such an interesting point as well, because I'm someone who loves going deep into things and understanding the history and everything. So I personally am like, how can you just look at things from the surface and just see it as just the day itself and protect that part of it and not want to be invested in what actually lies underneath and what the day actually is for many people, First Nations people. And so, like, that's such an interesting point that you've raised. Karen, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, look, I think to your point of going deeper, the deeper you go, the richer it gets. And that doesn't mean that it's all roses, but I think there's something quite special in that as well. I think if we can embrace the pain and the hurt, that helps us heal, that helps us move through this. And it's not necessarily about forgetting those things. In fact, if anything, it's a reminder of those things, because that's a time and a place we don't want to go back to. When we saw people oppressed to privilege another group, that wasn't us being at our best as Australians. And I think that's what we need to be kind of uncovering. And so again, let's remember these dates and the importance of it. Let's open up the conversation. There is nothing to lose by opening up the conversation, and yet there's everything more to gain by embracing people where they are and bringing them on board. And that includes, to be honest, people who feel threatened by the idea of changing the 26th of January, people who have British ancestry, who were part of those kind of early waves of British migration. That's part of the Australian story too. And I think if we're going to be this mature nation, we've got to find ways to embrace all of that and tell this new story of who we are, which includes our British communities, it includes First Nations communities, it includes the many, many waves of migration that have come, and that creates this amazing nation. But yes, to that point around we need better racial literacy, we need to be able to talk about this without pushing people into extreme positions of either, you know, yes or no in this binary idea, because that's not going to get us anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Look, we all love our sport, so the next National Day should be when Australia wins the next World Cup cricket.
Let's not start with cricket or football, yeah, or tennis.
Being SBS,
I mean, come on.
Being SBS, it's when Australia wins the World Cup in soccer, right? Yes. That will be a day that unites everyone.
Hopefully that's soon.
Unless we play India in the World
Cup. Touching on the point of conversation to wrap up this chat, I see the three of you as change makers in this conversation. The people who I see paving the path forward, the ones who have the voices who can empower change. So I would love to end this chat by talking about, you know, how do you believe you can get other people on board to be part of that conversation? And what is your message to those who may be still reflecting deeply into Jan 26, what it means for them? And yeah, what do you have to say to those people?
I think firstly, it's about respecting each other. Okay. We need to respect that people have a difference of opinion, and we need to respect that people understanding a First Nations culture is at different levels. So I think respect each other, but also have a hunger to learn more. Have a hunger to learn more about First Nations history. And in 2026, it's not good enough anymore to say, if you don't know, just don't find out. The information is there. have a hunger to learn more about the real history of this country, and that is the identity of this country. You can't just pick elements of it and say, that's our identity. Our identity is all our history. It's a story of you, it's a story of me, it's a story of them, it's the story of us. And that story is the story of Australia.
I think continuing to listen and being open to hearing each other's stories. And I think, I mean, if you generally have that hunger to learn more, you will find things that connect and resonate with you. So whether it's, I mean, we can talk about sport, but we can talk about, you know, the experience of Lionel Rose coming up through the ranks as a boxer. We can talk about the experience of Catherine Freeman in athletics, or we've got tennis going on, even Goolagong Cawley. There's some great all sorts of multimedia out there to learn more. So I think being open, continuing to have conversations. I think debate is really important, respectful debate, to listen to each other, to truly hear each other, to then think about how do we move forward. If we shut off from each other, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to retreat to our corners and nothing gets better and nothing changes.
I love that you name drop. All those stories are so fantastic. I think people should look into them.
They're great stories.
They're amazing stories. Giri Dharan, bring it home for us.
So I would say to the people who are listening, and I would say generally, be curious and be kind. Be curious about who we are, about our history. Be kind to those around you in terms of trying to understand where they're coming from. Curiosity and kindness could take us a long way, and it's the opposite of being closed-minded. And I think curiosity and kindness actually lead to you being happier as a person. So that's what I would say to people.
JP, Kara and Giri Dharan, this has been such a privilege to host the three of you here today. Thank you so much for joining me on SBS Spice.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.